The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and the Washington Post. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we're going to begin with the first. As the headline goes, first Learjet sold is now in Wichita to be restored and fly again. Kerry Ringers wrote the article, originally for the Wichita Eagle newspaper. It also appeared in the October 7th, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. And to put things in perspective, let me first read a caption from a photo that accompanies the article. And it says, this photo captures the first flight of the original Learjet, which was a test plane. Due to pilot error, it crashed in June 1964. The pilots walked away, but the plane had to be scrapped. Now on to the story. As the unofficial historian of Learjet, Dick Kovich admits he's actually done dumpster diving to save items related to the iconic brand. That's why he and other former Learjet employees and aficionados have kept tabs on the first Learjet ever sold to a customer. 1964's Learjet 23 registered N200Y with the FAA and also known by its manufacturer's serial number 23-003. Back then, the company's name was two words instead of one. It was the first plane that was specifically built as a business jet, said Kovich, former Learjet employee, who went on to work for the brand after it was purchased by other companies, including, finally, Bombardier in 1990. It's now known as Bombardier Learjet. Bill Kincaid, who worked for Learjet, is still at Bombardier Learjet, and he's someone else who watches over old aircraft, including this one. The real significance, he says, of it is that they created the business jet industry that we know today. Of the more than 10,000 business jets built in Wichita, he said, this aircraft's delivery started that timeline. A number of years ago, Kovich got word the plane was no longer registered with the FAA, so he did some digging. It took us a while to find the airplane, he said. Last year, he got a call from the father of the man who owned it. I hear you want to buy a Learjet. Thus began what likely will be a long and expensive journey to save and restore the plane through the Classic Learjet Foundation, which formed in August 2022 and hit a major milestone this summer with the acquisition of the plane. We spent a couple of months just trying to figure out if it was feasible to even do it, Kincaid said. Before the group officially formed, he, Kovich, and others reached out to the aerospace community to see if there was support to pursue it. The results were pretty overwhelming, Kincaid said. Al Higdon can explain why. Higdon joined Learjet a month after the first plane was certified to be marketed and stayed until 1971 when he left to start what became the Sullivan, Higdon, and Sink ad agency, where Learjet became a customer. He said, of all the great aviation products he's been associated with, the Learjet uniquely fosters and encourages passion. When he heard of the new foundation and its ambitious goal, Higdon said, I thought, what an enormous challenge, but if any organization of people can make it happen, these folks can. Next section, headlined, Easiest to Sell. Just as Scotch tape is commonly used as a name for all tape, Xerox is another name for copy, and Coke can mean soda in general, so too has Learjet become something of an all-encompassing name. The Learjet name is still synonymous with private jet travel, said Lynn Crowe. Lynn Crowe is CEO of Denver-based International Jet Aviation. In 1979, when he co-founded the company, which, along with managing planes, is something of a taxi service for the sky, Crowe said the business started its fleet with a Learjet because the Learjet name was the easiest to sell in the charter world. Even today, he said, customers will say they want to book a Learjet when what they mean is they want to book a private jet. Chris Marshall, who worked at Learjet for a dozen years, said the Learjet name has just had such a panache and an influence. He said Learjet founder Bill Lear brought two concepts together in a new way, jet propulsion, which the airline industry started using in the late 1950s, and smaller business planes. At the time, a lot of companies used twin-engine piston planes for corporate travel. The business world was moving kind of slow, Kincaid said. If you'd fly a jet for business, you'd have to get a plane basically designed for military purposes. The planes cost a lot and were expensive to operate. The Learjet 23 proved to be a relatively economical aircraft that would allow business people to do more in a day. The 2 in the 23 stands for the twin engine, and the 3 indicates the company's third design iteration. The plane had a flying range of about 1,200 miles, or 2 to 2.5 hours. Its speed was Mach 0.81, or 81% of the speed of sound, which translates to about 500 miles per hour, depending on altitude. Its original altitude reached 41,000 feet, but quickly jumped to 45,000, and later rose to 51,000 for other Learjet models. Now, with the advances, Kincaid said a business person could travel to several cities a day and be back home for dinner. He said the plane was configured the same as any jetliner of the day, but could easily get in and out of small airports. It was a very versatile plane in its operation, he added. The Learjet went into production in 1962 and took its first flight on October 7, 1963, the 60th anniversary the foundation is celebrating, with assistance from Bombardier, and that was on October 7th, this past October 7th. And by the way, there was an anniversary tab about this group. It's called classiclear.org, Classic Lear, spelled L-E-A-R.org, and you have more details there if you'd like to check it out. Now, due to pilot error, the first Learjet 23 had an accident in June 1964. The pilots walked away, but the plane had to be scrapped. The aircraft type was certified not long after. Then, on October 13, 1964, it was delivered to the first Learjet customer, Chemical and Industrial Corporation of Cincinnati. The company paid $395,000, or about $3.9 million in today's money. As more features were added, the plane's price quickly jumped to around $550,000, which is about $5.4 million today. Chemical and Industrial Corporation leased the plane back to Learjet for it to occasionally make demonstrations to potential customers. The market was sort of caught off guard, and the Learjet brand was the leading brand for several years, Marshall said. Others, such as Wichita's own Cessna and Beechcraft, followed with more business jets. There also was a second test plane that was produced before the Learjet sold. That plane is in the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. It's important to a lot of people to have something to mark the achievement in Wichita, too. It's part of the fabric of Wichita, Marshall said. That story deserves to be remembered. Next section, headline, God Bless You. The first step in saving the Learjet was to send a team to the Bartow Executive Airport in Florida, where it had been sitting for almost a dozen years in the humid outdoors. Knowing how long it's been there, I was impressed that it wasn't worse off than it was, said Joel Weber, who worked at Learjet for a decade. Weber now works for Lee Aerospace, which offered to fly the team to inspect the plane and later to fly representatives to Tennessee to negotiate its purchase. Lee is one of the numerous companies to offer in-kind support to the foundation. Those in-kind donations are just amazing, Kovich said. Even though the plane had sat unlocked, it had not been vandalized. The cockpit was complete, Kovich said. It even had an 8-track tape player in the cabin. The 8-track player was something else Bill Lear helped invent. Now, Marshall enjoyed seeing the jet, which continues to inspire so many jets today, sitting there. The beauty of those lines of that plane just shone through all that age and neglect, he noted. Well, Kovich said the team didn't start the engines, partly because there was corrosion and partly because of wasp nest in them, but the lights came on, the instruments came alive. The team decided the plane was worth saving, and that's when the foundation formed. There were hopes the owner would donate it, but Kovich said he needed money for his flying service. They agreed on $90,000 and that the foundation could move it to Wichita to store it out of the elements while it raised money to buy it. The plane now sits in Bombardier's Building 14 in Wichita, which had been a Learjet delivery center until Bombardier ceased Learjet production after the final Learjet was delivered last year, and that would be 2022. Some Learjet retirees came to see off the partially disassembled plane in Florida before it was trucked to Wichita, as did Brenda B. Veer, a British expatriate who was married to the late Bill Lear, Jr. Brenda Lear said her late mother-in-law, Moya Year, kissed the nose of the first Learjet as it came off the factory line, and so I kissed it goodbye on its way to hospital, she added. She also wrote, God bless you, 003, on the side of the plane. Later she said her father-in-law would have loved the foundation that was formed to save it. Oh, Dad would be thrilled, she said. The next section is headlined, The Legacy of Learjets. Along with contributing her own money to the restoration cause, Brenda Lear has had another key role in the project so far. She helped recruit her friend Clay Lacey, who is known as Mr. Learjet, according to Crow. Lacey had been an advisor to Bill Lear and was the first West Coast distributor for Learjet, and then started his own California company to market and sell Learjets, particularly to celebrities such as Frank Sinatra, John Denver, Johnny Carson, Jack Nicklaus, and Arnold Palmer. Marshall said the brokerage market was another part of the Learjet's success story. This aircraft played a significant role in the emergence of that market, he said. The Learjet became this phenomenal product that everybody wanted, and there had to be a way to buy it. Lacey and Crow partnered to offer the foundation ideas and connections, and the men donated enough money to complete the plane's acquisition. I felt this was really something to keep the legacy of Learjets out there in front of the public and let future generations know about, Crow said. Now, the actual work on it can begin, which will include help from past employees who worked on this very plane as it came off the assembly line. There are still some of those guys around who are just itching to get their hands on it and bring it back to life, Marshall said. Though the private jets of today may have fancier interiors and more electronic instrumentation, Crow said they still fly close to the same speed as the Learjet and at about the same altitude. Bill Lear was a pretty advanced guy, pretty much ahead of his time person as an engineer and inventor and businessman, Crow said. Remarkably, he said, nothing has changed in 60 years in a way in terms of the overall capacity of what a private jet can do. What has changed, of course, is cost. With cash and in-kind donations, the conservative estimate to restore the plane is $2 million to $5 million, partly depending on what condition is when the internal structure can be inspected more closely. Funding is the key to the success of this venture, said Marshall, who is serving as the lead fundraising director for the foundation. Foundation members have talked with management team of DOC, that's the restored B-29 bomber, for advice on how to proceed, Kincaid said. He said, DOC told us essentially how to make this happen, and there's a way to help section that's on the classiclear.org website for various options to contribute. Now, the foundation wants to take the restored plane to air shows, have it on display in Wichita, and offer rides so people can see and hear and experience what the original Learjet was like, Marshall said. When it's finally airworthy, it will likely take 3 to 5 years. The foundation members believe it will be the only Learjet 23 still flying in the United States. We intend to fly it as a living flight history airplane, Kovich said. We want to show what you can do if you have the passion and the foresight to see something, to see a need, and get kids interested in aviation. He said it will offer a chance to talk to people about the significance of this airplane and the industry. The airplane will not only represent Learjet, but it will represent Wichita, he added. Higdon said it represents a pioneering achievement, too. It does signal a milestone event in the history of the industry. He said as Learjet was racing to be first, there was a sort of us-against-the-world mindset. Once Lear and his team did it, Crow said the company shrewdly placed its product everywhere it could, such as movies, TV shows, and all kinds of things where it could get out in the public eye. Then artists and others continued the publicity gratis, such as when Carly Simon sang of a rake who flew his Learjet up to Nova Scotia to see the total eclipse of the sun. Well, Marshall said he knows so many 35- and 40-year employees of Learjet who dedicated their careers to building the planes, and that's part of his interest in preserving the first one sold. Lee Aerospace's Weber said he, too, is interested for the sake of Wichita, where so many people made their livings making 3,055 Learjets, including 104 Learjet 23s. It was first. That's what's special. He said it had such an impact on Wichita and beyond. Well, the word quirky comes to mind for our next couple of stories about travel. These stories focus on two very unusual travelers, each with a story to tell about their travel exploits. Kyle Melnick's article about the exploits of a Danish traveler is headlined, "He visited all 195 countries without flying. It nearly broke him." Now, this article appeared in the August 7, 2023 issue of the Washington Post. And here's the story. De Bjørn Pedersen packed a suitcase with a few necessities in 2013, shirts, jacket, shoes, a first aid kit, and a laptop, and excited to begin a historic journey. Pedersen hoped to become perhaps the first person to visit all 195 countries without flying. Now, he figured he could return home to Copenhagen in 4 years as a record holder. But Pedersen recently walked off a boat in Denmark, having completed his objective 6 years later than anticipated and feeling fortunate to be alive. Pedersen said he ventured about 260,000 miles via cars, trains, buses, taxis, boats, shipping containers, and his own feet. Pedersen, age 44, said he encountered hundreds of challenges, including visa problems, war zones, and near-death scares, but he finished with a reformed confidence in himself and the world. "I feel well above my age coming out of this," Pedersen said. "This could be 50 years of life experience crammed down to 10 years. In January 2013, Pedersen read an article about tourists who had visited every one of the world's countries. Pedersen had built a career shipping products and planning construction projects worldwide, and he had recently started dating. But he wanted to set a travel record, so he started a plot to route that would take him around the world without flying. Pedersen said he received funding from a Denmark geothermal energy company that took an interest in his endeavor, and he withdrew thousands of dollars from his savings account and took out loans. In October 2013, Pedersen said he began his travels by riding a train from Denmark to Germany. He said he then spent at least 24 hours in every country, where he often rented a bed in a dormitory or a hostel, or found a host on the app Couchsurfing. He aimed to spend about $20 per day. Traveling Europe was the easiest part of his voyage. Pedersen encountered his first hurdle when he said he couldn't find a boat to take him from Norway to the Faroe Islands in December 2013. About 3 weeks later, Pedersen said a shipping company let him on board. "That kind of stuff seemed hard at the time," Pedersen said, "but that's child's play compared to what I had coming." In May 2014, Pedersen said he rode a boat in poor conditions from Iceland past icebergs during a storm. Before the boat arrived in Canada 12 days later, Pedersen said he thought it could sink and crash. Well, in June 2015, Pedersen said he was diagnosed with cerebral malaria at a Ghana clinic. He said he believed he was infected by the parasite about 2 weeks earlier in Liberia, where he said he slept outside a gas station. Pedersen said he hallucinated and temporarily lost his ability to perform simple tasks such as writing. Even after about 2 weeks of treatment, Pedersen said his hands shook for nearly 3 months. But other moments reminded Pedersen why he started the voyage. In the Republic of Congo in October 2015, Pedersen said he sat on the back of a truck with about 50 people as they traveled on a dirt road. At one point, a woman began banging a water bottle against her hand and singing. Within seconds, everyone on the truck was singing together. Still, Pedersen grappled with thoughts of quitting around that time. He was exhausted and lonely and felt people weren't taking his mission seriously. Well, his perseverance only diminished in January 2016, Pedersen said, when he was traveling through an African jungle at night and encountered a group of men drinking and dancing to loud music. When they spotted Pedersen, he said three men pointed guns at him and asked what he was doing. Pedersen thought he was going to be seconds from dying. Well, the men let him go, Pedersen said, but later that month, a man fell asleep while driving him and seven others in Cameroon. The car drifted off a dirt road and approached a cliff when Pedersen said he jumped from his seat and grabbed the wheel. Still, the kindness of other people kept Pedersen motivated. While Pedersen said his visa request to some country was denied for months, he found taxi drivers or mutual friends who were residents of those countries to drive him there. Pedersen visited South Sudan in November 2016, almost 3 years into the country's years-long civil war. He was terrified as he watched buses being shot at and passengers attacked, he said, but it wasn't long before the pendulum swung the other way. Later that month in Kenya, He made one of his best life memories when he proposed to his visiting girlfriend, Lee, atop Mount Kenya. As he chronicled his travels on social media, Pedersen said people offered to host him and buy him a beer when he visited their countries. People often asked Pedersen how he would visit North Korea, but he said he was able to book a trip to the totalitarian country with a cheer group. In March 2019, he and a group rode a train into North Korea from Beijing. The country was the only one to brief visitors on its guidelines, such as not taking pictures or dancing in front of government buildings, he said. Pedersen experienced one of his favorite memories in October 2019 in the Solomon Islands. The electricity was out, and a resident asked him whether he had any movies on his laptop. About an hour later, about 80 people were sitting around his computer watching the thin red line. Pedersen said he noticed commonalities among people worldwide. Everyone was discussing Game of Thrones when it aired in the 2010s. People played soccer and fiddled and fidget spinners and shared their opinions on Donald Trump in almost every country, Pedersen said. In March 2020, Pedersen said he arrived in Hong Kong with 9 more countries to visit. Then the coronavirus pandemic struck and suspended international travel. Pedersen said he was able to get a job at a church that provided him housing. "There's no legit answer why I didn't quit," Pedersen said. "I should have quit many times." After living in Hong Kong for nearly 2 years, Pedersen said he went on to Palau in January 2022. In October, he and his fiancée got married in Vanuatu, among palm leaf decorations and hearts etched into the sand. In May, Pedersen said he arrived at the final country, Maldives. A few days later, he said he began a 2-month sail across multiple oceans to Denmark. About 150 people, family members, friends, and social media followers greeted Pedersen on Denmark's eastern coast on July 26th. Back in Denmark, Pedersen searching for a new identity. He was a timid a decade ago, but now hopes to give speaking engagements about his voyage across the world and write a book. Other than that, he just wants to go somewhere quiet where he can process what he learned over the past decade. While reflecting last week, and Pedersen said the mundanity of people's lives has struck with him. "People are just being people everywhere," he said. Wow, what a story. Well, writer Rick Riley's story is going to be about a man who has flown 23 million miles. Here are his travel secrets. This article appeared as a special to the Washington Post and also appeared in the June 25th, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. And keep in mind that it was published in early summer 2023. So you're going to fly this summer, Europe maybe, and you're dreading the way cats hate baths? Well, you need to talk to the man, rather, who's flown more miles than a human being in history. 23 million so far, or 22 million more than Apollo 11. His name is Tom Stuker, a 69-year-old New Jersey car dealership consultant, and he's the biggest mistake United Airlines ever made. In 1990, United offered a lifetime pass for $290,000. Stuker jumped on it and has pretty much lived in seat 1B, his favorite ever since. He once spent 12 straight days without sleeping in the bed, just jetting from Newark to San Francisco to Bangkok to Dubai and back again, the equivalent of 4 trips around the world, leaving the sky only for the airport lounge. Why? Well, duh, for the miles. "Best investment of my life," Stuker says. He realized that frequent flyer miles aren't just valuable for booking more flights. Once you get them, you can sell them, trade them, win auctions with them. Stuker has lived like a sultan on United miles ever since. Lavish hotel suites all over the world, weeks-long crystal cruises, gourmet meals from Perth to Paris. He says he even parlayed the miles into enough gift cards to redo his brother's house. The miles maestro once cashed $50,000 worth of Walmart gift cards in a single day. United quit offering the passes a long time ago, so don't get any ideas. Well, get this. Years ago, he won a charity auction by bidding 451,000 miles to be on Seinfeld. Well, he was on that episode where George's fiancée dies from licking envelopes. Stuker's the man in the diner. He has seen more than 100 countries. He figures that he and his very happy wife have been on more than 120 honeymoons. He has played United like 3-card Monte, and there's been nothing they can do to stop him. But it's the weirdest thing. Sometimes hostages love their captors, and the United loves their loss leader. Over the years, the airline has put his name on not one but two planes. Thomas R. Stuker, customer. They let him help design the menu at their new Polaris clubs. He says that when he has a tight connection, there's a Mercedes waiting on the tarmac to wish him to the next gate. Any airline ever do that for you? Well, I flew with him from Newark to Los Angeles once just to see it all for myself. Tom Stuker doesn't do airlines like you and I do airlines. When he calls the 800 number, they go, "Mr. Stuker, is that you?" Ropes come down, doors fly open, and free champagne bottles end up in his bag. You know how the gold, diamond, platinum level customers way better than you board planes first? Well, Tom Stuker has already been sitting in 1B and eating nuts from little porcelain cups for 10 minutes before they ever get called. He has taken thousands and thousands of United flights, so I just had to ask, anybody ever die up there with you? Four, Stuker says. Four? Yeah, four. All heart attacks. I'd met a couple of them, too, just died right in their seats. The last guy was up in business with me, Chicago to Narita, which is Tokyo. They covered him with a blanket and put the seatbelt back on. What else could they do? I guarantee somebody in business was thinking, hey, if he's not going to eat his chocolate sundae, would you mind? So what advice does the very frequent flyer have for you this summer? Well, lie to the first flight attendant you meet inside the door when you board. She's the head attendant. I always say, I remember you. You gave us such great service last time. I wanted to thank you again. Even if I'd never met her, I guarantee she'll bring you all kinds of free stuff. If you couldn't book the seat you wanted, keep your phone open to the SeatMap app as you board. And if blocked seat is that you wanted opens up, just take it. And he says, they won't care. They never sold it. Well, never check a bag. Never, ever. And underpack, he advises. Every town has laundromats and stores. Well, don't be a jerk and use your cell without headphones. That way people won't hate you. Whenever somebody takes a long-distance call on the speaker, I always say, hey, next time you're going to have all of us to your business meeting, bring donuts. Well, my best travel advice, get to know Tom Stuker. He has miles coming out of his attic windows, and he loves upgrading to his friends. Plus, Stuker's miles will get you number one on any United upgrade list from today until the day he drops dead, and hopefully not until after the Sunday. Oh, my, my, my. Well, let's wrap up in our remaining time. North Carolina, home to the best family-friendly spot in America, so says TripAdvisor. This one appeared in the October 22, 2023 online edition of the News and Observer. Here's an excerpt. A popular spot in North Carolina has been named the best family-friendly restaurant in America. TripAdvisor released its 2023 Traveler's Choice Best of the Best Family Restaurants report. Out of all the restaurants across the country, Outer Banks Boil Company and Corolla ranks number one at the top of the list. Outer Banks Boil Company Corolla offers unique seafood experience that visitors in the Outer Banks won't want to miss, the report says. Specializing in signature seafood boils, the restaurant provides fresh and delicious options like shrimp, scallops, mussels, lobster, and more. The Outer Banks Boil Company Corolla is a must-visit for those seeking an unforgettable dining experience in North Carolina's Corolla region. Unlike the traditional restaurant experience, the restaurant's seafood boils are available for takeout or catering so that you can prepare and enjoy a traditional Carolina Lowcountry boil on your own, or they can set up the equipment, cook, and clean for your group. All taking place in Corolla on the Outer Banks. And that, my friend, brings us to the end of today's journey of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you that the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.